Welcome to the show. It's Real Talk with the Sixth Man. I'm your host, the Sixth Man. This podcast is uncut, unscripted, and we talk about a wide range of topics. Black entrepreneurship, social injustice, education, finances, the family dynamic, Me Too movement, Black Lives Matter, and mental health, along with many more. It's a Real Talk podcast to empower, educate, encourage, uplift, and inspire, and to allow others to be better than they were yesterday. Welcome back, y'all. Welcome back. You are tuned into Real Talk with the Sixth Man. I am extremely excited to get back into recording the way I have started out back in 2018. So this is very exciting for me. But the content tonight isn't going to be as exciting, but I think it's going to be informative. My guest tonight isn't anybody who's unfamiliar to the platform. She's been on the show now. I think this will be her third time, if I'm not mistaken, third time. And actually want to give her flowers in regards to actually set me up in a studio for almost a year. Doing this, and I understood how the production and the nuances of being in the studio, and I actually miss it, because I actually miss just coming in the studio, sitting down, and the producer asks me, "You ready?" And I say, "Yeah," and it's just all the music, the intro, everything is done for me. So it's been great. But love, I want to thank you for the opportunity, man. Whenever we sit down and talk, man, it's always a great conversation, even if it's, not, for the masses. So I kind of just want to just start with everything that's going on, with the youth today. I actually went on live today, and talked about, a few instances where, this, 17-year-old uptown shot and killed a 14-year-old, and they had police footage of the situation, and they said that it was a young lady with him at the time, and then they ended up following the young lady home because he apparently rode a scooter to the incident, and then after he committed the shooting, the young lady took the scooter and took it home, and so they actually were able to follow the lady home, through cameras, through all of the cameras that we got in DC now. And once they got to an apartment building, they realized that this wasn't a little girl. This was actually the boy's mother. And I thought that was like, whoa, right? Like, wait, what?
Yeah, wait, what?
Like, wait, you, his mother? Like, wait a minute. So, and then we got another instance where in Virginia, there's another incident where a young man, 14 years old, shot another young man, but the young man's injuries isn't life-threatening. But the mother, turned him in and basically, turned him into the authorities. So you being a mother, you having sons, I want to get your take on, should parents have some responsibility, or let me rephrase that. Should parents have some accountability for the crimes that their children commit?
So first, let me say you are very, very welcome for when you first came in the studio and everything. I want to thank you too, because you helped me get over my little anxiety of doing it. So I like to appreciate you for that.
Oh, for sure, for sure.
So to answer your question, yes, I do feel like the parents do need to be held accountable. I'm a boy mom. I raised my kids by myself. And they knew to be in the house at a certain time. They knew not to do nothing crazy, because my discipline and my punishment was different. I take things, you can't come out the house, and I mean it. And I will have like a cousin, a sister, or somebody to stay in my house to make sure they didn't leave.
Right.
And I always stress to them, you will never have what society pings black men to be. You're going to do something better for your life. You know, I'm a single mom. I can't raise you to be a man, but I damn sure going to raise you to be an adult.
Right. I got into a conversation one time with a young lady, and it kind of went left because she felt a type of way, and I was not necessarily disappointed, but I mean I can understand why she was feeling the way she was feeling, but I just feel like it's a bigger conversation in regards to fathers not being in the home, mothers, blocking the father from being involved if he want to be involved, and it kind of spans out of control, and even when I think about it, I feel like that there is this conversation that needs to be had, but it all kind of filters back to, why the youth are at the point of where they are, currently, and then. If there is any accountability that needs to be, if there is any accountability that needs to be, withstood, does the accountability stand with the child and the parent? You know what I mean? Especially if they're living with, said parent, And so it's just one of them situations where I'm just like, man, it's something got to give. And it's crazy because, I was speaking to my coworker, and my coworker was like, let's just say if the child is staying with the mother, and let's say the mother is the custodial parent, and let's say she's receiving child support for the parent. Let's say if they do an investigation, find out that, she's not doing all she can do and not necessarily using the funds for the betterment of the child, what if they stripped her of her child support? I was like, that would be interesting. I mean, do you think if that was one of the accountability statutes, if things would change?
Yes, take something away that you're getting, because technically you will have enough. If you had to get money to take care of your kid, you will be able to have it to take care of your kid. But if you're getting a child support and you're not spending it on the kid, and you all on the ticker talking and making sure you try and be a hood celebrity and things like that, and not listening to your child, yeah, take it away, because you're not using it right.
Right.
You're not using it at all the correct way. You know what I mean? Like, you're not taking your child and putting them in, like, classes. There's a ton of things that you can take your child to do. You can put them in different little, they don't always have to do dance and music or anything like that. You can put them in different stuff, art classes, take them to swim classes. I don't know, do something else with them. Take them on trips, take them away to nature or something, different places, get them out the city.
Yeah, and I do think that is a responsibility of the parent to you've manufactured this human being. And now this human being is out in the public just, terrorizing the community. Something has got to give. Something has got to give.
So it's also that some parents don't listen to their children. They rather tell them what they want them to do and make them do what they want them to do, opposed to just sitting down having a conversation, especially when they're 14. When they're 14, you got hormones going. So now you can't sit there and try to make them do something like he's five. You have to ask them, what are you into now? What do you like? What's your passion? What is it that you don't like? Some people may like to read and they want to listen to music while they're reading, but you want them to sit downstairs at the table.
Right.
So you got to understand what your kids want. And then they may be going through something. It's teenage stuff. We have to remember. We were their age before,
correct,
but they've never been our age.
Correct.
And we got to remember what we did then.
And I feel like it's a lot of parents that's trying to be the child's friend and not the parent.
Yes, that was my next one. You have to know.
A lot of that going on.
It is a lot. And that's what I mean by y'all are up on. I can see if you want to do some family social media stuff, show how it is. But you can't be on there like this your road dog, this my best friend, we about to go shake a tail feather. You can't do that. You have to have a bridge right there. That's your friend and that's your child. You got to make that friend where they're able to come with an open door, have it open so they can come and talk to you and not hide anything from you. But you can't be that friend like, ooh, we about to go get this. Or tell your sons like, yeah, I'm going to go get you these sneakers because we about to go hit this club. But no, oh, I'm about to go take you here again. No.
Right.
No.
Right. So I heard a parent tell me once that they would be okay with their child possibly indulging in either drinking or smoking in the house, but not indulging with the child.
So I understand what they mean by that. The meaning of that, I get what she's saying. She's saying, if you're going to go out here and sneak around and do it, I'd rather for you to do it in the house and not out with nobody else, then you end up on the corner dead somewhere. I understood what she meant by that.
I mean, I didn't pass any judgment. I mean, because, you know, for me, I kind of looked at it, I guess, a little bit different because my mother didn't want us to drink or smoke, you know, at a young age at all. But then when my mother found out I was smoking, it was like it wasn't really too much she can do. Like, I remember the night I came home and it was like maybe 12. And as soon as I walk in the house, I go straight to the refrigerator. She come down and says, where you been? Where you come from? Da-da-da-da-da. She turned the lights on. She see my eyes. She was like, what's wrong with your eye? And I'm in the refrigerator. A nigga fried eggs and bacon trying to figure out, I need to get something. But I kind of, when we had this conversation, the way she made it sound, I did kind of agree with the fact that you would rather want your child to be in a safe place doing that versus being out in the street not knowing what's going on or what possibly could happen. So it's kind of one of those situations where, you know, it teaches its own type of situation and each parent is going to parent a little different. So it was no judgment on that. But I did want to get into, you know, the nuts and bolts of this conversation tonight. And Councilmember Trayon White had an interview, and he posted live on his Instagram. So if anybody wants to see or wants to hear this this interview in its entirety, it is on his page at Councilmember Trayon White on IG. And he was talking about the Department of Youth and Rehab Services, DYRS, right? And he was saying that it was some stuff going on there and, you know, they had heard some things going on after a year and recently within the next, you know, past 2 weeks, they've heard some, you know, horrific stories about stuff that's going on there. So what I want to do is I'm going to play a little bit of his interview, and then we gonna come back and we gonna dive into it because I know you have a experience, a life experience directly tied to, you know, DYRS, and you have like a passion of sharing what you've been through so people, you know, will know that this is not something that is new. So I'm gonna play this interview, a little bit of this interview, to give people some context, and we'll be right back.
Council member here in Washington, D.C., of Great Ward 8. Part of my responsibility is also having accountability and oversight of Department of Youth Rehabilitation Services, also known as DYRS. We've seen a number of issues happening here over the course of the year, more recently in the last 2 weeks. And we did an emergency pop-up visit walkthrough today, and what we saw today is alarming. It's a lot of frustrated youth in here, and as a result of being frustrated, they've been acting out in various ways. This facility is very short-staffed, and as a result of the short staffing, it's compromising the integrity of the institution and the services for our young people, and it's compromising the young people's lives. I'm putting people on units that they're not supposed to be on, put people in situations they're not supposed to be in. And as a result, several fights have occurred, several assaults have occurred, and even down to flooding units. We've also learned that some a lot of the young people. I spoke to about 45 youth today, including females, and they have a number of complaints. I couldn't even get all the complaints in at one time because I had to be back out here to this press conference. So we want to do another follow-up within the next 2 weeks to hear more from the young people, make sure. Like, we just, it was a whole argument today because youth are complaining they didn't have soap. Soap. They're forced to use hand sanitizer to wash up. And there's also a level of cultural competency that's missing here. Because while the youth, I'm saying, this is the administrator that's supposed to address your issues. They said, we try to talk to her. And she came and put her hand up and said, I'm not trying to deal with that right now. That's disrespectful, right? A sitting council member here, the youth trying to express how they feel so we can get to the bottom of the issues, or why they're flooding, why they're riding, why they're fighting. And she said she's not going anywhere. She's still going to be there the whole time sitting in the back of the room. So staffing is an issue, also leadership. I believe that everything rises and falls on leadership. And I believe that the interim director of Abed is trying to do what he can to get this facility where it needs to be, but we also have these issues at New Beginning. And so as a councilman, I'm concerned. We were joined also today by Stephen from Councilman Pinto's office. Councilman Nita Bonds is here as well. She left early. We'll be here. Other councilmen who are concerned about what's happening in this facility. It's my job to make sure that we hear from the residents here, hear from the staff, hear from the administration, so we can fix this because it's a broken system. I'm noticing in a basketball courts inside the facility where they're able to play, there's no rim and no basketball court. It's just cement. I'm noticing a lot of the facilities inside the rooms, there are no TVs. Some of the students are also complaining that their lawyers came Friday, and when they talk to their lawyers, they've been turned away from the facilities or talk to their parents over and over again. So the frustration is growing. They're like, what is going on? How can we talk? Why are we in our room for 23 hours and get out for 1 hour? I was talking to one group of students that only get education for 30 minutes. I mean, they're getting 15 minutes of English and 15 minutes of math. That's against their common, that's against their law, their human rights, right? That's crazy. 30 minutes total and being locked in their rooms. The intake process is supposed to last for no more than 10 days. Some of these youth have been on an intake process for 3 months, 3 weeks, 2 months. And then you have Title 16, which are sentenced as adults, mixing with other general population, was causing more issues. And so they're telling us, and we don't need them on our unit. And they make, we are on lockdown all day for 24 hours for something to happen on the first floor, and we're on the second floor. So I ask the administration, what's the logic behind this? And there's no answer. Everybody looking around at each other. And so it's a lot to talk about during this time, because I have a whole phone full of notes. You can see. This is from today. It's from today. I'm going to read a little bit about what was said by some of the youth. The phone cuts on at 7 o'clock and cuts off at 9. We are on a unit with a non-committed, with a committed kid. Because by law, we have to share half of the time. We get 2.5 hours total, while this one person gets 2.5 hours. So we have to share 2.5 hours. We're getting out from 10 to 15 minutes per student or per youth, and got to split the time. One other person get to be out for 2.5 hours. We get between 10 and 15 minutes. Basically, what he's saying is they got one person that has to split the time with 10 other people. It's 11 people in this unit. And so while this one person's out for 2.5 hours, they have to split 2.5 hours between all 10 of the rest of the people that's in it. Makes no sense. And they're saying sometimes when staff is not showing up to work, they're forced to stay in the unit even longer. Youth also complained that they're not getting their food on time in the morning. This was one unit, one instance. I don't want to say it's an overall system, but this happened last Friday where youth didn't get fed for whatever reason. And I asked the staff what happened, and they couldn't give me an answer. Why were these kids not fed for a whole entire morning? They go to talk about the structure, trying to create a cafeteria and get some things built. That's not an answer to why these kids, they eat Friday morning. What happened? And so there's a lot of looking around, and I'm not satisfied with some of the answers I've heard preliminarily, so we're going to be doing a lot of follow-up. Let me read some other things I've heard from some of the youth. There are others, a lot of staff complaints. The staff, they want to put their job on the line, but, there are a lot of staff not here today. And they say they mostly don't come on the weekends. They just toil out and don't come on weekends. And as a result, guess what? The youth have to stay in their room all weekend because there's no staff to watch over. Even the report I read from the November 2nd incident, there was one staff person walking a group of students down the hallway. So when a fight broke out, they didn't even have the people in place to restrain or stop the fights because not enough people. So you got to think about a group of people brawling in a hallway and have to wait for somebody to come up from another floor to assist them to stop a fight. By that time, the injuries are more severe than they could have been if it was de-escalated early on. And I got a chance to talk to some of the youth who were allegedly involved in the assault. And they, you know, and I don't justify anybody's behavior. As you can tell, that they say, maybe we complain about this, we even complain to her, we talked to her, we talked to him. But to no avail. So I'm asking them, when did they talk to you guys? What was the follow-up being done? And when I heard that they were frustrated because they didn't have soap, they didn't have to take a shower, through hand sanitizer? Go ahead.
No, you're good. Go for it.
Take a shower through hand sanitizer? And they said they put an order. Come on, man, in Washington, this agency gets over $89 million a year. The new fiscal cycle just started October, and it's the beginning of November. We can't get soap. Soap, man. They said they're not getting the basic things they need to even feel humane. Combs, brushes, those type of things. I have a whole list.
Hi, this is Amechi with the Amechi Effect, and for daily inspiration, you can follow me on Instagram and Facebook at The Amechi Effect. Amechi spelled A-M-E-C-H-I.
So after hearing that, it was a few concerns that I had. Some of the things that he brung up that I took notes on was, the leadership. It hasn't been consistent leadership there. At this treatment facility, which is, 1,000 Mount Olivet. And he was saying that the former director was asked to resign. And then they just got a new director. So it's like no accountability, you know, and structure in terms of somebody being there, you know, over time. As you heard, he said, there's a lack of leadership. Lack of staffing. He was saying that intakes normally take 10 days. He talked to some of the youth there, and they said that it's taking, 2 weeks, a month, 2 months, 3 months. He was even saying how, some of the youth have telling them that they don't even have soap to take showers. They're using hand sanitizer. And he was saying, we got a budget that they get, this department gets $89 million a year. I was like, wait, what? $89 million a year. And so he was going into, when it's short staffing, the youth are locked down 23-1. I know exactly how that feels, but I don't think that a youth needs to be in that type of mindset. He was saying how the Title 16 youth are a little older and that they are, being populated and being mixed with the younger youth. In the facility, he said he spoke to 45 youth, and it was just so many things that had come to his attention that he was just like really baffled and concerned, in terms of, everything that's going on there. And I know maybe two people that come to mind that worked at that facility. And like he said, it's been people that either retired or they quit because it was just too much going on in that facility. And one of the things that I want to point out is he said that it's been on their radar for a year, but now in the last 2 weeks, it's gotten, much worse. And that's what made them do a pop-up to go there last week to see what was going on. Now, I think for me, I just want you to kind of go into your experience just as a youth in a, juvenile detention center or somewhat type of, rehab facility, in your day, because I want to know, is this something that has just popped up recently, or is this something that's been going on for years?
So this is something that has been going on for over 30 years. I first went in 1991. And I want to say it had to be maybe September, October of, no, I take that back. It was actually March of 1991, to be exact.
And what facility? What facility?
It was at 1000 Mount Olivet. So it wasn't called DRYS back then. It actually was called the Receiving Home.
Okay.
And when it was called the Receiving Home, it wasn't all looking fancy like it is now. It was a building that had barbed wire at the top of the building because it was the outside where we went to actually go out in a little courtyard or whatever. Okay. And it had barbed wire up there, and it had 1, 2, 3, 4. It was 4 units that was in there at the time. You had downstairs, which was your auditorium, your schooling. And upstairs was our doctor's offices and things like that. When I first went in, it was just for truancy. And I spent 30 days in there for truancy.
Okay.
We are mixed with, so you had your younger girls on one unit, your older girls on another unit, your younger men on one unit, and your older men, your older gentlemen on another unit.
Okay, so it was still co-ed back then.
Yes, it was very much co-ed. Okay. Because I remember I was going in and out of there for like 8 months, so just kept getting in trouble going in and out of there. That's what I'm saying. Like October, when I really had to sit down in 91, in October I came back and they switched that from the unit we was on to the boys' unit and put the boys on our unit because we were overcrowded. We had more young females in there than we had males.
And you said this was in 91?
Yeah, this was 91, 92.
Wow, okay.
Mm-hmm. Wow. We slept on carts inside the room.
Okay.
And things like that. We'll put them up in the morning. Now, we haven't had the part of the shorter staff where we were locked down because of that, but we did end up getting locked down whenever we got in trouble. And our lockdown lasts anywhere from 2 days to 2 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And can you give an example of something that would get you locked down?
Yes, so I can actually give you an experience that happened to me.
Okay.
So there was, I'm not going to get too much explicit, but it's okay. It's a little soul-wrenching. So
okay.
This one officer of the day, I had an issue with him ever since I had got there. And I'll just say this one day, you know, it was a lot of riots in there. It is a lot of riots, and a lot of times it's somewhat of the kids, but a lot of times the staff edge them on, and some of them aren't mentally stable, so they'll go off, and then that'll get everybody going.
Okay.
So he comes this day, and he proceeds to touch my breast and my private part.
Wow. Okay.
So I'm still this young girl, you know, I'm a young teenager. I'm probably like 14 at this time, 13, okay. 14 years old at this time, 13, I think. And I'm losing my mind now because this grown man is touching me. So I proceed to hit him with a chair, and I caught assault with deadly weapon / chair. And I got locked down for a week for protecting myself.
Wow.
Another incident.
Wait. And so how was that situation handled? Like how did you get closure? Like was there any accountability? Did the officer get reprimanded? Like how did that end?
So no, it happened. So I actually caught 5 ADWs on him.
And an ADW is assault with a deadly weapon.
Assault with deadly weapon.
Okay.
Yes,
okay.
I had 5 of them chair, curling iron, whatever was in my possession for me to get this man away from me.
Wow.
They even got me for a simple assault on him because I tried to go ham on him really bad. Wow. Until one day we were out and one of the young ladies was like, y'all got to take him away from her. Because he keep touching her, and y'all not doing nothing about it. She keep telling you all, right. And you won't listen.
Right.
So they never listened. So all they did was told him he was not allowed on a female unit. no type of anything
now,
else.
Now, I guess as a man, my concern is, why would a man be in a female's unit versus a female? You know what I mean? Because I know even when their arrest made and, you know, male officers pull over females and they need to be checked or need to be whatever, they call for a female officer. So was it back then it was just, you know, males could be on either unit, or it was this something that just, I mean, it wasn't questioned? I mean, because, I mean, even now you would think that it would be females on the female side of the unit and males on the male side of the unit, right?
Correct. He was in charge. He was actually the head person in charge. Oh. So whenever something goes on, the male, whenever we have a fight, anytime the girls have a fight, anytime anything happens, so they do have female guards, but they will call the men guards to get us because of some incidents that happened where some females beat the dog shit out of the male guards.
Almighty.
I mean, the female guard and the male guard that was in. I mean, I gotta call it what it is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And it just, I don't know. Like, it was never questioned to us. It was never anything. Some of the guards actually, I want to say, don't quote me, two or three, no more than three of them in there, had kids by some of the young women that were in there with me. Now, mind you, we were 14, all the way up to 18. But they were 14 and 15 like myself. These men were 22 and 25.
Mm.
Kids grown now, but yeah.
Right. That's kind of scary though. To think that this, like, you've been involved with some of the things that Trayon mentioned just last week, but we're talking about 1991. And now it's 2023. I mean, this is a brand new facility. I don't think it's been there over 10 years yet. I don't think. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could be wrong, but I don't think it's been there 10 years yet. Because I can remember driving through, you know, that New York Avenue corridor and driving past it and it was like, what the hell is this? And, you know, a friend of mine told me, you know, oh, that's a new detention center I worked in. You know, it's this, and this. And I'm just like, oh, damn. Oh, okay, bet. And so I can imagine the type of facility you all were housed in compared to, you know, the newer facility that they have now. And I mean, they're talking about, you know, it's a youth there that councilman talked to and said he got into an incident, you know, with a personnel, and the result was he has a swollen nose and he doesn't know if his nose is broke and hasn't seen the doctor in a week. And I'm just like, wait, what? And so you're telling me y'all kind of, you know, went through a similar, you know, situation where this guard, you know, does something to you and you locked down for a week like him. But, you know, were you injured?
Me?
Yeah. Were you injured in the incident?
Yeah, I got injured a few times.
No, but were you injured in this incident when they locked you down for a week?
Man was fighting.
Oh, like, okay.
Me and him had fought 7 times. I'm talking about knuckle up fighting. A man.
So when you went, like, so did your injuries get treated even though you were locked down? Like, did somebody from medical come and make sure you were okay?
So all they did was whoever was the nurse or doctor on, they just come make sure you don't, nothing look like it's broke, supposedly, and check you out. But you can't really tell unless you do an x-ray. So to answer your question, if they ambulance you up out of there, you got to be unconscious or damn near dead.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and Trayon actually used the word inhumane a few times because, you know, it to me it just seems. And I mean, I've been incarcerated. I've been, you know, in a few places that, you know, wasn't really a happy place to be. And I'm thankful that I've gotten out of that mindset, and I'm much mature and, you know, was able to get through a lot of that stuff. But it just made me just think about a lot of the stuff that he mentioned in his press conference. And when I thought about you, and we've had prior, you know, conversations about the youth, because that's kind of where our hearts are, you know, just trying to figure out what can we do for the youth, you know, whether they're in, whether they're out, you know, how can we, you know, just prevent them from either going back and then prevent them from going at all. You know what I mean? And so having those conversations and understanding that you know, were in that space, I'm just like, wow. Like, I wonder what can be done. Did you think that there's anything that can be done to, like, in this case, they don't have any stable, leadership. I mean, everybody's kind of, you know, not staying. There's no longevity. So, like, what are some of the things that you think can be put in place to make, you know, these facilities a little bit better for these youth?
So, first you need the right type of people in it. So, obviously, their interviews aren't going the way they're supposed to go. I just got to say that.
Okay.
In order to deal with youth that have, whether they have charges or whether they're just, like, literally mentally not there and this is why they're acting out, again, you have to have a special person. Also, the programs that they had back then, it did help me. It helped me a whole lot. So they had residentials in which I don't know how many of them, but I do know they closed quite a few of them down. They only have a handful open.
Okay.
The residentials help you because you get away from the city, like I said before. You go into these programs, you have your schooling, you're doing everything you need to do. When it comes to the counselors being in there, they need to more so listen to what the children are telling them and how they're feeling because you don't know what's going on in their household or what's not going on. Sometimes they're scared to speak and they don't want to talk about it because they think other things are going to happen. So you got to have them right counselors and then right people in there. As far as the facility, they need a bigger one and you need to change the location, period.
So you think the location is bad location? Because that's over near Trinidad.
It's very, listen, let me just say this. I don't know what it looks like now. I would love to go take a visit to see exactly what it looks like.
Oh, I can imagine based off 1991, it looks a lot better than what it was when you was there. Mm-hmm. I mean, more updated, more sophisticated. You know, security, cameras, you know, fenced in real nice, looking, you know, real professional, you know. But to have all of these, you know, incidents going on, I mean, here it is, you know, Trayon is saying that they allocating $89 million a year. And yeah, these kids don't even have soap to wash their ass. That don't make sense.
That's the truth because, again, we had officers. Now, I will tell you, I told you, some of them officers were fantastic with us. Fantastic. She will bring us soap and toothpaste. She even bought us towels and washcloths out of her own pocket. She made sure her girls was clean. We had deodorant, soap, toothpaste. We had curling irons. We had hairspray. So she made sure she went and bought it out of her own pocket. So to let you know, no, they did not have all of them things in there. The kids that are in there telling you all that there's no soap, no nothing, it's the truth. When I came out of there in 90, when I got released out of there in 94, I was having stomach issues to end up going to my doctor to end up finding out I had H. pylori. If you're not familiar with that, H. pylori is when you ingest water or anything with feces in it. So the water over there had feces in it.
Wow. And you know, like in the press conference, he was saying that in order to, I guess, get recognized, that the kids are breaking the sprinklers and flooding the units to, you know, stuffing stuff down in the toilets and, you know, just so somebody can come and see what's going on.
Yes,
and I mean, got staff there. You got staff there. I mean, Trayon was saying that, you know, talking to the kids and, you know, speaking to the staffers, and the staffers are like, I don't want to deal with that right now. He like, huh? What you mean? So I mean, it's like we got this collective of. So me personally, I feel like there is. I mean, people can say I might be overdoing it, but I feel like there is a state of emergency in D.C.
Yes, it is.
With the youth, I mean, primarily. I feel like there is a state of emergency with the youth in D.C. With the emphasis on carjacking and gun violence right now.
It is. It's bad. So, public record, I'm not going to mention a name, but it was in the newspaper. I was in there when a young man hung himself.
Wow. Okay.
That's it. Mentally, it messed a lot of us up. Yeah. So, it I don't know what to say about that part, but it needs to be better counseling. It needs to be better staff. When he wants that lady, when he couldn't take the fact that lady said, I don't want to deal with it right now. Just imagine how she said that to him. Just imagine how she speaks to them kids.
So Oh, yeah. I absolutely caught all of that. I absolutely caught all, because you know, like I know, dealing with government employees, it go left sometimes. Mm-hmm. It go left sometimes. I mean, even at the DMV, child support, you know, whatever. It go left. I mean, we get these people these customer service jobs, and they're really not customer service professionals, and they just, you know, it don't be a good look. But I'm sad to hear that we have this influx of, you know, violence going on in our streets with the youth. And it's almost like, okay, we're going to take them and rehabilitate them in this department, and we send them to this center, and it's kind of worse than being on the street.
Yes. It's like, so to answer that question, it's actually like being on the street. It really is.
No, I can agree. I can agree.
Now, you said something about the money situation. I'm sorry, we're going to go back to that part. When you say something about the $89 million that they get in a year, I want to piggyback on that real quick.
Okay.
So remember how they said that all five of them staff members got hurt? Let me go ahead and clue you with something. Anytime they get hurt inside that facility, they get 45 days with pay. Let's set that down.
And so they get 45 days with pay, but then they, like, get them like a substitute to keep staffing kind of level?
I don't know if they bring other staff in, or they just let them stay out for 45 days and they get paid. So they come on the unit, and say as though, prime example, like how me and a guy got into it.
Mm-hmm.
So one time his shoulder got dislocated. He was out for 45 days. The next time, his mouth busted. Oh, my teeth hurt. He was out for 45 days. So the little brawl that went on, I have my own analogy of what happened. But you're saying five staff members got hurt. And you're saying that they took the key. How did one person get a key from one person in the little hallway that the other staff that you didn't have a walkie-talkie to call the other staff to come help you out? But five of you all got hurt. So y'all tired, y'all don't feel like dealing with them. So now y'all want y'all 45 days with pay. But what y'all and not understanding is now we didn't hit the news because of this.
I think that because one of the reporters asked Trayon, them flooding the unit, do you think that was intentional? He was like, absolutely.
Yeah.
He was like, absolutely. That's why we here. And I mean, it's sad that they have to go to that extreme to get recognized and get people to see what's going on there. But that, I mean, it just saddens me because again, we got this epidemic of violence in our streets with the youth. And it's almost like, you know, where do we put them? And I mean, they go to court, they get no paper, they get put on probation, and they get sent back to the street.
Remember I told you I went in 91? Mm-hmm. And I said that I actually was in from, so I had a juvenile record open from 91 to 95. I went in 91 for 8 months almost, straight up and down, in and out, because they never really charged me. They kept sending me home on probation, sending mm-hmm. me home on to a group home. Mm-hmm. I would run from the group home. And I cannot tell you how many dirty yarns I had before I got stepped back.
Mm.
So I feel like, and I have to say this, and I was one of them juveniles. I'm glad that I changed my whole life around and everything is good, but they should have got a little hold on me way better than they did back then. Mm. I got to do so many things. Like I told you, I was on a run. I would run from the group home. I had dirty yarns. Again, like I said, and they never really did anything harsh. But when you get in there, it's like, Lord Jesus, I got to survive. It's just the fact you don't want to go in there, but you're able to get away with so much stuff. They shouldn't be so lingering on, on the kids at all.
Lenient.
Yes, on the kids, 13 and up. Because at the end of the day, I remember being that 13-year-old. When I went in there, I learned so much stuff from being in there. When I got home, I knew how to get away with things. And they was telling me stuff. How I could get away with stuff.
Right. You definitely learned a lot of shit, and you definitely learned a lot of shit you didn't know until you got there.
Yeah, so juvie is not a playground. Nah. Juvenile is like, I'm sorry, juvie is really like you having to be in adult jail, surviving. And most of your survival is not from your peers. Your survival is from these older adults ready to put their hands on you.
Right.
First off, I feel like anybody 21 to at least 28 should not be working in no juvenile facility, period.
You think they are not mentally able to do the job?
No, they're not. And the reason I'm saying that is because some of them juveniles that they see coming in, mind you may got a 16, 17-year-old coming in. You got a 22-year-old working. We went to Dagmore Junior High School. When you came to high school, I was leaving.
Right. Or it could be a family member, and they could have been beefing, and now you see one of the, I know him. I got him tonight.
So that went on. So a lot of that went on, too. A lot of staff got paid off. A lot of staff will bring people food, whatever they want. If they don't like somebody, they'll open up their cell. If he like get put them in a cell with that person, they'll get beat up, and then they'll get whatever they want, they food, they weed, whatever they want. Wow. So that's why I said you can't have 22 to 28 working in, because some of them 22 to 25-year-olds that was working with us, exactly what you said, situations that happened outside. Now, you got a little cousin coming in. You like, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and open up that cell, let you do your thing.
Oh, yeah, because I've actually seen that on numerous occasions. Like, I've actually been involved where my cell was popped at the end. My cell was popped open in the middle of the night, and a couple guys came in my cell and beat up my cellmate. I mean, I'm on a top bunk. I look down, they look at me. They like, you see something? I turned over and looked at the wall and went back to sleep. I mean, my cellmate was mad at me, but I'm like, Slim, it was five of them. What was I supposed to do? Like, I mean, we cool, but I mean, it's hard for me. To explain that one, because I'm like,
you said adult jail.
I'm just saying. I've seen COs that knew somebody was coming in and put the word out, this person is coming in the unit, and then he's in a cell with somebody else, and then in the middle of the night, you hear these click, 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 clicks, and then you hear your door click, you're like, what the fuck? And then four people walk in. I'm like, wait, what the fuck going on here?
So you said adult jail. Just imagine that at juvie.
No, this was at, okay. That was at Upper Marlboro. That was in Upper Marlboro. But I have seen stuff like that at Hickey School, because I was in Hickey School for a hot minute too, where you had to wear the little sweatsuit, the little blue sweatsuit, and it was like kind of like military. You had to get up and make your bed and do your push-ups, do PT and all this type crazy shit. But I did notice that it was some favoritism, if that's what you want to call it, favoritism. Towards some of the inmates there, and you know, some other youth got more of an advantage than others, and I have seen staff rough up kids that they necessarily didn't like for whatever reason or whatever. So yeah, I mean, it's all It's all fucked up, but I still take it back to the fact that we got all of this, you know, we got this emergency, you know, on our streets, and it's like we supposed to be putting these kids somewhere where they supposed to be getting rehabilitated, but they not at all.
So I got the icing for the cake for you. So you ready? I was waiting to tell you this one. You know where Oak Hill is, correct?
Absolutely.
So they had a center that set up from Oak Hill called Spruce. Spruce was an all-girl facility. I was one of the first females to go over there when they reopened Spruce. Okay. Where's Spruce at now? Y'all getting all this money. The facility was big enough for all of us. Strictly all females. It wasn't even co-ed.
Okay.
Strictly females. So you go to the receiver home first. You get checked in. You may spend no more than a week there. And then they need to train. Then they transfer you out there.
Okay.
So where is that center at? Oak Hill's still out there, but y'all made it like a military school.
Yeah, because they have a, it's called the, it's called the...
New Beginnings
is out there, and then there's this Youth Guardian Challenge that's out there as well. Because I actually spoke to one of the intake people there in regards to finding out how I can help them get mentors for their program. Because in their program, you have to have male and female mentors for the kids in order to successfully graduate from the program. And I did the one that was in Aberdeen. It was called the Free State Challenge in Aberdeen, Maryland. And I did it for 18 months. I had a youth. His name was, I'm going to just say his name was Dre. And I had to drive out there on multiple occasions, sit with them, go through a curriculum that they created, teach them how to do resume writing, figure out what they want to do when they get out, try to help them come up with a plan. And it was an 18-month investment. Like, this was something that his mother was grateful that I did it, and it was something that I was kind of nervous to do it at first, because I didn't think I was like the right person to do it. But she called me. She was like, "No, Kevin, when I see you with your daughter, you and from what I know how you used to be, this is perfect for you, because you'll be able to talk to my son and really like get in his head and let him know where he's headed. He don't want to head." And then it's cool, because when I get there, I'm talking to him one day, and I'm sitting at the table, and I guess some of the dudes that he met in there is coming to sit at the table while I'm talking to him. And as I'm talking to him, I can see a lot of the young men gravitating toward my table, because I'm just kind of kicking it to all of them, like telling them, you know, "Hey, man, this not it, man. I was a young, I was 17, I had a baby." And the dude was like, "Oh, man, I'm 16, I got a baby." I said, "I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not saying congratulations, but I'm saying that, you know, that's not normal. You shouldn't be that young with a baby, because your life is going to be a little harder than somebody else that don't. You know what I mean? And now that you in here, your life is going to be twice as hard, because now you in the system, you got a record. So when it's time for you to go get a job, do an interview, and they do that background, trust me, it's going to be harder for you to get the type of job that's going to help sustain you." And I said, I went through that for 5 years, you know, working construction and these hard hand, these callous jobs, hurting my back and my arms and my shoulders for 5 years. Just because I had a back, you know, because I had a juvenile record, and you know, couldn't get certain jobs, so it opened my eyes to a lot of stuff. But it also allowed me to understand that there are programs out there for the youth. They're just not being marketed very well, because I didn't know anything about this program. But then once I got involved, I found out that it was one in DC too, which is located in Laurel. But they consider it DC, and I was like, damn, so it is programs out here. It's just people who want to be tapped in don't know what these programs are. So through my nonprofit and our social media pages and also my podcast platform, I try to promote as much stuff that I think is good as possible. So people that are out there that do want to volunteer or do want to get involved, I try to promote it as much as I can, so people know that there are, you know, programs and, you know, stuff that they can get involved in, mentorship and all types of stuff. But it's just concerning for me a little bit, love, because I mean, you know, it's just we grew up in DC. You grew up uptown. I grew up on the South Side. I mean, to me, it's a little bit, you know, two different worlds, you know, based on how we grew up. But you know, it's similar in a way where I mean, with the youth, it's like, I mean, you're 17.
Yeah.
You just caught a charge. Where they gonna put you?
If they can't put you in this,
system here, this DYRS, where they gonna put you, over to jail? And yeah. I don't wish going to DC jail on nobody. Like, I mean, I am serious about it. I remember going to see my man when he was over there for like 2.2, and we talking, and I'm looking at him, and I'm crying inside, because I'm like, Joe, it ain't no motherfucking way I'll be able to do this. Because, I mean, we was in the streets, getting a little money, you know, living good, eating good, and now I'm seeing my man behind this plexiglass, and I'm seeing motherfuckers walk past, and I'm seeing, because I know how jail is. But I'm just looking at this jail particularly. I'm just like, this a raggedy motherfucking jail, Joe. Mm-hmm. And niggas talking about how rats be in their cells and shit. I'm like, what?
Oh, yeah, we had mice and roaches in
it. Man. I remember I'm over Central Cell Block one night, woke up and saw a motherfucking mouse in my... I was like, oh, man, just get me out of here, man. And I swear I ain't coming back. And Central Cell was the coldest, raggediest place I had been in my adult life, because I had did some dumb shit in my adult life and end up going there for a weekend. And I was so, I mean, when I say I was so upset, I was in that motherfucker for 3 days. I was sick. And so I just, you know, when we use the term rehabilitation, I'm like, what does that look like? And these kids, from what this interview is saying from Trayon, it doesn't look like they're being rehabilitated. They look like they're, you know, living in a inhumane way, and it's not helping them, you know, get back into society.
It's not. They have to. My thing is, when they get in there, listen to them. Listen to what they trying to tell y'all, because some of them don't even really want to go back home. They really want y'all to place them somewhere else without saying it. Kids aren't going to speak. Y'all took the programs. If y'all use that area over there where y'all got New Beginners, which was Oak Hill, y'all had Spruce, if y'all rap, the drug program and all that stuff over there, if y'all take that land and just buy, because it's a lot of land right there.
It is.
And just put your whole, the youth facility out there, start doing little stuff with them. They can't leave. They leave where they going, to the highway.
Yeah, because it's in a perfect spot. It's in a perfect spot. Yes, thank I agree. You. I agree.
And they got ward hogs out there. I seen the kids with the horns.
Yeah,
out there.
It's different out that part of Maryland. It's a little different.
Skating ring.
Yeah, it's a little different.
We used to go skate. It's an old skating ring. So whoever used to live on that property had a lot of stuff going on up there. Mm-hmm. And I feel like they need to take it and utilize it. This way, while these kids are in here, y'all rehabilitating them. Find out what they like, because I'm here. Y'all made us go to school, but now y'all giving them 15 minutes to school because y'all can't get the teachers to come in there.
Right.
What?
Right. Can't get staff in to come in, locking them down when staff call out. They were saying that they not being groomed. So like the guys and the ladies who want to do hair or barber, they got the rooms, but they ain't open because they not letting them do it. I'm just like, man, so what are they doing? So, my thing is, I remember our conversation, and when I heard Trayon talking, I kind of wanted to get you on just to share a little bit, just so people can know that, you know, this wasn't something that happened last year, or this ain't something that's been going on in the last 2 or 3 years. This has been something that's been going on for decades that, you know, needs to be fixed. I mean, just like, you know, parole and probation, child support, it's so many different entities that's just outdated and need to be updated and need to be, you know, reevaluated, because the shit is not working. Like, again, you know, 91, y'all had a subpar facility, but here it is, it's 2023. They have a state-of-the-art facility, and it's not working.
Nope.
With the people that's, you know, having these types of jobs. I mean, he even mentioned that one of the people that's working there has a $100,000 salary and don't think that they deserve it. I'm just like, wow, like, this is crazy.
Yeah, okay. Remember, I told you, and you got your listen. Anytime, so it's a lot of them that was getting paid. Like I told you, the dude that used to always come on the unit, he was the head dude at night, always. He was the head man in charge. Then you had your older women and the older men that been there like 5+ years. Now, back then, they was making really good money. So, like I said, if they get hurt, they go home and make that same money.
Mm.
So, they used to get hurt a lot. A lot.
Yeah, and I mean, and I can see, you know, things happening that they probably didn't intend happening, you know, fights and, you know, when certain youth come in and they might mm-hmm. be beefing or whatever. So I get it. I mean, I get that part. And, you know, that's something that's inevitable. That's something that you got to, you know, train and be prepared for. But, I mean, some of the stuff that he was talking about that's going on, and I only gave y'all a little bit. I mean, the actual interview went on for about 25, 30 minutes, and I didn't want to give you the whole 25, 30 minutes. So, again, if you want to hear more of, you know, that particular interview, go to Trayon's page on Facebook. I mean, on Instagram. I think it might be on both. I think it might be on his Facebook page and Instagram. But I saw it on his Instagram page. And you can see it there because, you know, the reporters asked him a lot of questions and stuff like that. But I just wanted to get you on, you know, just so people would know that this ain't something new. Like, this ain't something that, you know, just happened overnight. This is something that has been going on for a long time. And like he was saying, you know, it needs to be fixed. And I do. I agree. I mean, people need to be held accountable. And it needs to be fixed. And just like, you know, with the juvenile justice system, you know, was just, you know, no papering these kids for certain things or, you know, putting them on probation, but just letting them back out on the street. Like, I got a friend of mine that I used to work with, and her son was murdered by another teen. And, you know, they were giving this young man bail to come home. She was like, Kevin. Mm-hmm. Did you see this shit? I'm like, what? I mean, it was the incident that happened at the Dave and Buster's off Ritchie Road. I want to say 2 years ago. I want to say it's 2 years ago. I could be wrong. But it's just sad to see that these young people are out here living their life the way they are. And there's a lot of us in our age that's looking back at it like, I can understand to a degree. But I also want to intervene and step in and say, hey, this is not it, young fella. This is not it, young lady. Because it's not it. Because a lot of the shit that we encounter, that you encounter, that I encounter, being, you know, behind the wall. And, you know, I hear people always talk about, you know, being in jail 10, 15, 20 years. And I'm like, yeah, I ain't ever did that because I didn't get caught. You know, I moved a little different than a lot of other people. But one of the things I want to close with is I heard it said, and it made me think really, really hard about just society and how we think overall, especially the younger people. And it was said that a man or a person, an OG, an individual who goes to jail and spends 10 or 15 years in jail can be respected and listened to more than a person that didn't go to jail and living a life the right way for 10 or 15 years. So these kids are listening to these older dudes that's coming home that did 10 or 15 years versus listening to the dudes that they see the last 10 or 15 years that's living their life the right way. And I'm not saying that a lot of the OGs that's coming home, you can't listen to them. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying, how do they get more respect? And they got caught. They went to jail. They did time versus the guys that's out here and been out here. Like Kirk Bone, I've been listening to, you know, a lot of his podcasts on Kirk Bone TV on YouTube. And I think it's great that he's doing what he's doing to kind of give more insight to what's been going on in D.C. versus us having to listen to the Alpo and, you know, all that New York shit. Because D.C. got his own story. So I'm happy that he's, you know, doing that and giving D.C., you know, their version of, you know, what we've gone through and talking to some of our street legends, so to speak, and some of the people, the boxers, and, you know, just all of that shit. But it just bothers me that, you know, we listen to people that been locked up 10 or 15 years and won't listen to the people that's out here that's kind of living their life the right way. I mean, me personally, I didn't always live my life the right way, but I always try to talk to, you know, whether it be a youth or an adult. I always try to say, man, look, this my story. I'm always transparent. This is what I've been through, Slim, and I'm trying to tell you the shit that you doing, the way you moving to a dead end, bro. And I mean, I'm never disrespectful. I'll never try to come at them crazy. I just try to come at them in a way where I get their energy and I fill it out, and then I try to just, you know, fill in a little bit. But man, yeah. I thank you for coming on, man. I just I don't know, man. It's just on my heart, you know, with the young people, because I was a young person, you was a young person, and I just don't like when I hear people say, oh, these young people crazy. Yeah, they lunching, but yeah. What was you doing at 13? What was you doing at 14? What was you doing at 15? You know what I mean? Like, don't do that. Don't just say they lunching and don't, you know, forget about your mishaps and some of the shit that you did. So I just wanted to, you know, shed some light on that and want people to know that, you know, this has been going on for a while. So, love, man, listen, like I say, man, you know, I appreciate your support all these years, even, you know, with being one of the first donators for our event that we're trying to have in May. Once we, you know, get the date locked in, I want to say it's tentatively for May 4th. So once we get that date locked in, I would definitely let you know. But I just want to thank you for being, you know, one of the first to, you know, want to support Type Inc. and our annual Black Tie event. And so, I mean, this conversation along with others would be a lot of those conversations that we want to continue to have in the community with those that, you know, have these life experiences and that can be shared so other, you know, adults and young adults can hear and possibly learn from. Because my thing is, I just want to be impactful. I just want you to listen and learn. And if there's any questions, you know, come ask me. But I could tell you, that video with those two young boys talking about the difference between armed robbery and carjacking and murder, it threw me way off. And it's all over social media. And I just keep telling everybody, social media is what it is. It's not going no fucking way. But everything ain't got to be on goddamn social media.
It don't.
Not and everything. Some
not
shit.
Not everything.
I mean, if you're going to have a silly-ass conversation like that, just have it and be done with it. You ain't got to post that dumb shit. Because that shit was very disheartening to hear them in their element have this conversation, calling each other dumb, saying that one charge was worse than another charge. I was just like, excuse me, they're both charges.
They're both charges.
And you're both going to fuck the jail, so what the fuck are we talking about? So
my thing is, if I can help just at least two of these juveniles to tell them, listen, I've been in your shoes.
Mm-hmm.
I got degrees now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm good now. Like, I've been directly in your shoes. I'm talking about I was in there from 91. I didn't get my charges dropped until after I had my son. The day I had my son was the day my charges got dropped in 1995, November of 95, to be exact.
Mm.
So that will be 32. It will be 28. Well, no, that's 32 years ago, actually, today. I mean, this month. 32 wow. years ago, if I'm not mistaken, that I had to go through one. Oh, yeah, remember I spoke with you about the youth don't understand this, and I don't think they're threatening them enough with this part. I got threatened with juvenile life, which is until you're 25.
Correct.
Until you're 21.
Correct.
The max juvenile life. And people think, oh, I'm going to get juvenile life, I'm coming home, and it's 21. The max is 25. I got threatened with it. You ain't got to tell me no more. I came home and did what I had to do. And I used my experiences from being in it, because if I had to deal with that in juvie, I definitely don't want to deal with that in an adult.
Yeah. I mean, actually, after being arrested and locked up, you know, like you said, numerous times, I don't want to deal with that shit at all.
Mm-mm.
Like, I don't want to deal with the CEO telling me that, oh, yeah, it's time to get out of the shower. Damn, dog, I ain't even washed all the way off yet. Get the fuck out of the shower. Damn, all right, bet. All right, damn. Like, it was, like, that 23 and 1, mean. Like, I got a story about being in 23 and 1 for a couple months. And you know, now looking back at it now, it did something to me. Yeah, I was in there for a little longer than 4, but it did something to me. And I remember coming out that cell for the first time. And I can honestly say, looking at it back then, I was an animal coming out that cage.
I flipped out when I got out. I was in there for 4 months. They locked me down for 4 months. Mm. I got out 1 hour. Mm. When I finally got off lockdown, I went right back on lockdown for another week.
Because you came out and went vicious and went right back. Yeah, that's the cycle that I'm trying to, you know, talk about and see if, you know, if there's a way we can, you know, look at how, you know, this rehabilitation is set up to identify all types of situations so we can be able to help these kids in every situation. I mean, I understand that, you know, some kids are going to be worse than others. I get that. But, some kids, you know, some of this violence is a cry for help, but we're looking at it like, oh, it's just violent. No, some of it is a cry for help. Some of it is, I need help and I don't know what else to do. So if I do this, maybe I get the attention that I need. And so I'm hoping
and
that
you
these,
know, some of them go to jail because they'd rather go to jail than to
be on the street. I've had conversations with them. Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's more of a sad mindset, but I get it though, because they don't have family. They don't have nowhere to live. They don't know where the fuck they're going to sleep. Like, I had a young man down here, you know, who was in his senior year, you know, five toes in, five toes out, trying to be a businessman, doing this, you know, little clothing line, little t-shirt thing. And I'm just thinking to myself, picking him up in the morning, taking him to summer school, but I'm picking him up every morning from a different house. Who house is this? Oh, this is my girlfriend mother house. Who house is this? Oh, this is my man house. I'm like, well, damn, can you imagine being 18, going throughout your day, and then before your day is over with, you having to really stop what you doing and think about where the fuck you going to sleep? That's serious. That's serious, Joe. It's a lot of people that don't stop and think about that. And that's why I say, you know, let's stop saying that the kids are crazy. Let's stop saying that, you know, they off the chain. Yes, we know that. But what can we do to help them? Because we were once their age. We might not have been as bad as they are now, but we was once their age, and we have done some of the same dumb shit. And the only reason why ain't nobody know about it, because we didn't have social media.
Yep, that's the only reason they didn't know about the stuff we went through. I was one of the ones. We had master keys to the Camrys back then.
I don't want to know.
So, when I say New Jersey Drive for real,
you bring back memories for real, man.
And when we got in trouble, we will get smacked on the wrist, but when they set us down, they set us down. But they had programs for us to go to inside there. Now, I just told you, we literally had stuff that we got to do. We were really fast then.
Right.
The residentials are the best things, Kevin, that they can send somebody. I went to Florida. I was in Melbourne, Florida for a year. I went in 92. It was cold here, so I want to say November 92. I didn't come home until October 94.
Okay.
And it was the best thing ever. So there were two of them out there. I was at one of the best ones. So they had them in Texas, Baltimore, Florida, Pennsylvania.
I mean, shit, $89 million a year, they need to be trying to do something.
That means somebody's pocketed in more money.
Yeah, when he said $89 million a year, I was like, "What the fuck?" Okay. Dang. Okay, something ain't right. That ain't adding up. No soap. Can't flush a toilet. No staffing. Yeah, something ain't right.
Yeah, no, it's the same thing.
Something ain't being managed right at all. Shit is crazy.
Yeah, they not. The lady bought us soap. She really used to keep out. Listen, she had one of them organizers for us. And she had these organizers she kept in there with our soap and everything. She kept it locked in a drawer, though. But she bought us all that stuff. So they not in their line. But I was waiting for somebody to say about how to, if you do something out of the way, Kevin, they won't feed you.
I guess last week on a Friday, he said it wasn't something that he think has been ongoing, but a group of kids didn't eat all morning for whatever reason. He wanted to know what the excuse was, and they was like, oh, we trying to, you know, rebuild the cafeteria or something. He was like, okay, but what does that have to do with not feeding these kids all morning? So it's just
a cafeteria. We ain't had no cafeteria.
Yeah, I mean, but even the excuse itself, like he said, did not. You know, you can't deflect from why you didn't feed these kids. Like, what they need to eat.
And telling the truth, though.
And with this dollar amount that he put out there, and I think he did that for a reason, is to say, what are we doing with this $89 million a year? And we giving these people $100,000 a year salaries, and what is the outcome? What are we doing?
Yeah,
So that, to me, that's the sad part. And I think, you know, the part of the conversation could be, you know, us not being a state, always got to go through the feds to figure out, you know, what the fuck can we do? What the fuck can we do? And I know that's another conversation, but you know, it's just, it's wild out here, man. But we gonna try to do this again. You know, it'll probably be a different topic, but a different format or whatever. But it's always good to have you on, man. I just wanted to, you know, chop it up with you for like 2 seconds. You know, just to, you know, get your take and, you know, let people know that this ain't something that's been happening for, you know, the last 2 or 3 years. It's been happening for a while. So listen, man, if y'all ever have anything that y'all want to talk about, I got something that I'm cooking up now. And it's going to involve a panel of black therapists, and it's going to be focused on men, getting healed from their childhood trauma. I think it's going to be dope, because I'm reaching out to, Facebook has a group of black therapists, and somebody allowed me to go in the group to become a member to ask if I could get some black therapists, male therapists, and they've been hitting me up, and I got like 3 of them that said they on board. So if it's just those 3, then it'll be us, and then, you know, we gonna line the panel up and we gonna have a discussion. And I wanted to be useful. So that's kind of all I want, man. This platform is just, you know, a safe space for people to share their life experience and be authentic, you know, in their own way. I don't judge. I don't bash. I don't look at people no type of way, because we all came from something, man. So love, I appreciate it, man. I'm glad you had an opportunity to come through, man. And like I say, man, whenever I got something else, yeah, man. When I got something else coming up, man, I'll let you know. And I also will keep you in the loop in terms of the event. Like I said, it should be May 4th of next year. But as soon as we get it all locked in, man, I would definitely let you know. So I appreciate you, man. And yeah, man, just love that you've been supporting me in all of my endeavors all these years. And, you know, I got your back no matter what, man. So I appreciate it. So if y'all ain't got nothing else to do, man, Trayon, council member, Ward 8, man, go and check out that interview, man. It's crazy out here, but it's all love, man. I just want to get the youngest the help that they want, you know, want to help impact them in any way I can, even through my nonprofit and some of our partners, you know, how we help out in the community, man. That's what we here for. So I hope y'all enjoy the rest of y'all night. Me and Amechi, we will be back for Real Talk Live this Thursday. At 8 o'clock, we will be directly on YouTube. I will try to share the link from YouTube into the group and to my other pages, because right now my streaming service and my laptop is acting a little tricky, so I'm trying to get that figured out. But we always gonna try to stay on point and get y'all what y'all need. So Real Talk with the Six, man. Love, I appreciate y'all. As I always let y'all know, man, be safe, be easy, be better than you were yesterday. Y'all be easy, man. I'm out.
Be better than yesterday, I gotta be better than yesterday. Don't matter if I'm playing 6-man or star, I'm better than yesterday. I gotta be better than yesterday, I gotta be better than yesterday. Don't matter if I'm playing 6-man or star, I'm better than yesterday.
We gotta be better, do better. That's every minute, every second. Dropping juice, hope you collecting them. The voice of the people, we all gon' get heard. This real spill, never clear what I say. Always tuned in, never tuned out. Gotta stay woke and be a sleepwalker. Gotta stand up,